Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Friends, it has long been established that bird is the word. It's a fine four-letter word, although I can think of a few others. Aren't you in luck today? Because Rich Guthrie is here. He is our avian expert. He is in the studio to answer your burning questions. Whether you're wondering about migration patterns, identifying marks on birds, or bird counts, Rich has the answer. And to take part in the conversation today, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email your bird question to voxpop@wamc.org. The world-famous Rich Guthrie is here, and we begin our bird show coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds today, and it's always a great moment when we can welcome back our bird guy, Rich Guthrie. He is here to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He's a popular guest. Call early. Be an early bird on the program. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number. Or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, Happy New Year, sir. Welcome back.
Hey, Happy New Year and happy almost winter.
Well, it feels like, you know, parts of the region got slammed with snow.
I know. Here and there.
Right in front of our beautiful downtown studios, there's no snow.
No, no at home. The river's not frozen. The ponds and lakes barely frozen, if at all. Hmm. So it's a strange start.
Well, there's plenty of time.
There is time. Nature catches up.
Richard Guthrie, last time we were on, there was a bit of a mystery about the golden-throated sparrow or some odd. I forget what the bird was exactly, but I heard you mention it, and frankly, I forgot the entire conversation. Why don't you give us a recap of what the whole question was?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Always on the lookout. There's a around bird feeders, there's always a possibility of a stranger showing up with the crowd.
Right.
And I put a call out last time, and I said, you know, listen, if you happen to be looking out there, keep an eye out for the green-tailed towhee,
right,
the lesser goldfinch, or the golden-crowned sparrow.
Oh, the golden-crowned sparrow.
That's
right.
It, yes.
Okay. And?
Lo and behold, golden-crowned sparrow did happen to show up at one of the feeders in the area, not the immediate area, but within a listening area. And there you go.
Wow.
And it's only the fourth time that this has shown up in New York State.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's that rare?
I mean, well, it's that rare for sure. And by showing up, I mean having been documented as being in New York. I'm sure that, you know what, here's the thing. That and the green-tailed towhee and the lesser goldfinch and a host of other oddities are out there somewhere.
Hmm.
The question is, will they ever be recognized where they are? Will they show up where somebody will see them?
And take a picture.
And take a picture and be able to document it. There's plenty of habitat out there where these birds can go and find, but that's the beauty of feeding the birds in the backyard. Birds love to are drawn to the crowd.
And when you have a confirmed sighting of this
golden crowned sparrow.
Golden crowned sparrow.
Golden-crowned
when you have sparrow. A confirmed sighting such as that, then it goes right to eBird?
Oh, we hope.
Yeah?
We hope.
Well, couldn't you do it?
Oh, I could do it. In fact, I did, as well as many, many, many other people. Yeah. The adult bird, here's it.
You know, that golden crown, it looks a little like our president's hair.
That, you're not the first to mention that.
Really? Okay.
But this one here is quite the character, all right.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Oh, because it's a reliable, good, rare species out there.
That's great.
But the young ones don't look like the adult in the book. And that's the other challenge, is that many of these birds in the wintertime have a rather diffuse plumage. Mm. Or if they're young, they don't look much like the adults. So it takes a little while to even recognize. So I imagine a lot of these are overlooked.
We wouldn't see too many young at this time of year, though.
Oh, right? Yeah, the young of the year, the ones that were born last June. In fact, that would probably the most likely to show up off course like this.
Well, Rich, the lines are loading up here. Let's do a quick message we received via Twitter. We were expecting an unusually large influx of grosbeaks and other finches this winter from Canada, and many have been seen in central New York and the Finger Lakes region. Do you think we'll see any at feeders in the Capital District?
I think the wave has gone through. They did show up earlier in November, and it peaked sometime around the end of November and then moved on, except in a few locales. I know down in Sullivan County, New York, in the Catskill Mountains, there are reports of groups of several dozen at different backyard feeders, but elsewhere, zero. So they wash through like a wave over a stone, and then on their way back to Canada next spring, they'll probably be back. In the meantime, yeah, that whole winter forecast, finches, was a bit of a disappointment. The grosbeaks and the crossbills and the siskins kind of like didn't happen.
Why?
Don't know.
It does happen from time to time, though.
It happens, and it is somewhat predictable. Because
how can you predict it?
You look at the food crop. It's all about food. And if the food crop up north is kind of sparse, these birds are going to have to move around to find some chow.
So it was good up north this time.
Well, maybe it was good someplace else. Definitely would show signs of being a poor year up north. We're talking pine cones and birch Atkins and the like. The movement has gone swept through the area. Actually, quite impressive with people having dozens or so at a feeder, but then they disappeared. They went further south.
Okay. Well, Rich, the lines are fully stocked. So that means when you're listening at home and you have a call, just wait until you hear somebody hang up and then make that call at 800-348-2551. We begin with Janet in Bearsville. Janet, you're on.
Well, hi. I have a question about barn swallows, and I'm wondering what will happen to the barn swallows if something happens to my very old barn.
They will have to find another barn.
Really?
Or a garage.
That's all they like?
Well, they actually, traditionally, they nested under the in the shelter of caves and cliffs. But with the onset of barns and garages and open porches, they moved right in. They make themselves quite comfortable, which is a good thing. They're great mosquito eaters.
Yes, they're great. They've just been coming here for years and years, and if the barn's gone, I'm worried about them, but they'll find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, they'll have to do that. And it won't be the first time for the species. You know, they have to be mobile and adaptable. But swallows, as a rule, throughout the Northeast, seem to be having a bit of a rough go of it these recent years. And it probably has something to do with the declining insect population. It's all about the food.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Thank you.
We appreciate the call. And we go over to Mike in Winchester, Connecticut. Mike, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Rich, there's a, I think it's a bird, but I'm not sure because I hear it at night, all through the night. And may I imitate it for you?
Oh, sure.
I
love that.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's just like, whoo, whoo, whoo.
Oh, good for you.
It's an owl, right?
Yeah. It sounds like what's called a saw-whet owl, SAW-WHET. An odd name for an owl, but that's a good imitation of it. And if you talk to it, I'm sure it'll talk back. In fact, come in closer. It's a tiny little thing, not the owl you get the image of on a bag of potato chips and the like. This is the little guy that is. In fact, they're quite, I don't want to say tame, but unafraid. And
very cool.
Yeah.
And Rich, would it be attracted to a suet feeder?
No, not likely.
Okay.
It's interested in the mice that are attracted to the seed on the ground outside, but not so much the suet.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the call. How big is this bird?
Only about 6 inches.
So about half the size of a...
Smaller than a pigeon, a little bigger, about... lengthwise, about the size of a robin.
I mean, I've seen some big owls.
So this is not one of them.
This would be half the size of some of the owls I've seen.
Oh, even less than that. Tiny little guys. Let me get a number here.
Oh, yeah. Show me a picture. That's great radio. Let's see. Oh, would you look at that?
There you go.
Which one is that, Doug?
The little guy on top.
Oh, the little guy on top. So he's, he's cute.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish you could see this, folks, but it's you can't. So let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. I know John in Cranberry Lake was on, and then we lost him, and then he came back. John, we'll go to you now.
I'm jumping back and forth. So last summer, I saw a bluebird in one of my bird houses that has been up on by my garden for a million years, and nothing has ever been in it. And I'm wondering, what do I need to do to keep that bluebird coming back? Do I need to do something for the house? Do I have to clean it, not clean it?
Well, the idea, if it was exploring the nest box, it was interested. And as you suspect, something discouraged that bird, probably the male. They're the ones that scout out territories, but it's the female that makes a decision to
choose. They stayed in there. There was a nest. She had
a
brood. She had eggs. I just want to make sure they come back.
Ah, good for you. Now's the time when you get down to it, clean it out, and then back in March as well. There may be, you want to make sure that the mice haven't moved in. So what I do with the bluebird nest boxes is I open them up, and I have a stick or a long screwdriver, and I kind of nudge the old material out.
Huh.
And quite often a little mouse will go scurrying out with it, but they'll have to find a new home.
Oh, there you go.
So take everything out, clean it out, and then put it back.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
That should
do it. Yeah. I've never seen a bluebird up here in the Great White North, and it was really good to see that bird, and it actually had chicks.
Wonderful.
No, that's
well, good for you. Thank you for that.
Hey, John, thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. The number, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Tell you, you get a stack of emails here at the break. When Rich Guthrie's in the house, you get a lot of emails. So, Rich, let's blast through as many of these emails quickly as possible.
Okay.
I know you have some events coming up.
Okay,
so
we're good.
Do that, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Hillary somewhere in 413 land. Hello, any idea why my cedar waxwings have been absent from our Indian magic crabapple tree? We miss them coming over winters getting berry drunk. Oh, well, that's it. That's nice, Hillary and Great Barrington. Thank you.
Party. All right. Well, the waxwings and the robins both like these crab apples and mountain ash and other pulpy fruit, especially later in the winter when all the other good stuff is gone, taken.
Yeah.
And what happens with the crab apples and other fruit like that is that the winter cold freezes the fruit, then it thaws, and in doing so, it seems to change the composition of the fruit inside.
Yeah.
And makes them softer and more delectable and selective.
Right. This one is from Gene in Clifton Park. In late fall, we had to have a large 70-year-old maple tree in our backyard removed because it was being hollowed out by ants. Now we have virtually no birds at our bird feeders this winter. Do you think these are linked? Our neighbors have a lack of birds as well. Can we do anything to get the birds to come back? And that's from Gene.
Well, it's all, again, in the wintertime. First of all, I don't think it was the large maple tree that had an effect. Most of the birds that come to feeders are eye level or thereabouts inhabitants.
Yeah.
So the tall trees will serve as a coming and going post, but about the birds, I think a lot of people are noticing low numbers of birds at feeders, and it has to do with the mild winter that we're having here in the Northeast in the listening area. Elsewhere, where the winters are more severe, the birds will be more anxious to come to feeders. So it's a waited out game, and when a storm starts coming, watch and see. They'll come flying in.
And, of course, we'll keep you posted about that here at WAMC. This one is from Edward. Will similar-looking birds like white-breasted and red-breasted nuthatches or downy and hairy woodpeckers ever interbreed?
Not likely.
No? Is
but
it
never
possible?
Say never. And right. There are so many barriers to that. Amongst bird species, but hybrids are known out there, and there's a couple of notable ones that occur quite often, a black duck and a mallard duck and the blue wing and a golden wing warbler and a few others. But for the most part, bird species do not interbreed.
Okay, this one is from Lynn. They are, where are the birds? They are missing from my feeders since early December. I'm in Castleton, and my friend in Claverick has the same problem. No birds. I mentioned this to my brother in Montana, and he, too, has few birds. None of us is replenishing our bag of seeds. because little is getting eaten. Please explain. Well, you've done a little of that.
Right. It's all about the mild winter. I think that's what the cause is. And again, stay tuned.
All right. This one is from Allison, subject heading Sparrow Invasion. We are suffering an excess of sparrows. Dozens of them are gathering in the bushes around our yard. Our driveway is constantly spotted with their droppings. Is there any way to get rid of them? We've taken down our bird feeders, tried the silver tape, at inflatable balls. What the heck does an inflatable ball do?
Not a thing, I don't think. I suppose it's meant to scare the birds, but you know, birds get used to these sorts of things if it's not a real threat. The sparrows, I can empathize with you.
Yeah.
I have them.
You're not a fan?
Well, no, not the house sparrow. They're a quarrelsome, noisy bird that come in swarms. They come sweeping in a group of 10, 15, 20,
yeah.
And then they just create all sorts of havoc and then move on. All I can suggest is that they're there for the shelter and the food. And what I do is they're very skittish. They're easily spooked away. So I go out and I just clap my hands and they're gone.
Yeah, but the silver tape doesn't work and the inflatable balls don't work.
Not, apparently not.
All right. I guess if they were light balls and you threw them at the birds, they'd...
Or snowballs.
Not to hit them, but just to move it in their general direction.
Yeah, snowball.
Well, that's very interesting. All right, this is Dave's email and then we'll get back to the phones. Dave writes, I walk the roads around here, the town of Ballston, Saratoga County, for the past few years. I rarely see a crow. I rarely even hear one in the distance. Are they in decline around here?
The simple answer to your question is I think so.
Really?
Yeah. I've noticed that too. And so have some of my neighbors. You go to the crow roost, the notable crow roost, you'll see hundreds and maybe more of crows that come to their traditional roosts. But for the most part, crows have been absent. I don't know what the cause is. And it may be part of their cyclical population,
yeah.
Ups and downs. I hope that's all it is.
They're my favorite bird, you know.
Well, mine too.
Really?
Yeah, I identify with the crow.
What? Well, no. All right. Now we're getting somewhere with our therapy. Why do you identify with a crow?
Crows are smart. They're very clever, and they're also very intelligent, friendly, and responsive.
Yeah.
And I miss the bunch that used to come when I come out the door. They would fly in from a great distance,
yeah,
to check out what I had to offer for food that day.
So you have to bribe them.
Well, that's part of the trick. I mean, they are smart.
Let's go back to the phones. Rich Guthrie, our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Richard, talk a little bit about the symptoms of lead and zinc toxicity in birds.
Can you talk a little bit about the symptoms of lead and zinc toxicity in birds?
Well, the heavy elements, if ingested in some form or another, will cause lethargy, which by its very nature can be fatal to any bird. And as the more that they ingest, the more so the symptoms will lead to their demise. We see this with bald eagles when they find a wounded, let's say, waterfowl that's out there that may have been shot with lead pellets.
Mm.
Naturally it will feed on the carcass, and ingesting the lead pellets is at their demise, at their peril.
Well, Jim, thanks for that one. Our number is 800-348-2551. Heidi in Highlands. Heidi, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering, I've seen a few couple ravens lately, and I was wondering how common they are around here, and do they breed in the Mid-Hudson Valley?
Heidi, thank you. Along with the crows, the ravens are also one of my favorites.
They sound like this.
Yeah, me too.
Good one, Ray.
Yeah, that's how they sound, right?
Well, yeah, sort of. Yeah.
No?
The gal ravens may not be turned on by that.
All right. Well, I hope they're not listening.
I love the sound they make. I always like a croaking toad.
Yes.
Or-
Yes. Well, the thing about the ravens is when I was a kid, which wasn't all that long ago, the ravens were totally absent from the Northeast. And I never thought that I'd ever see one. But now, for some reason, they have returned to the area and are nesting all up and down New England, New York, and New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Habitat change and also, probably less persecution. But I will say that Ravens, while absent for such a long time, back in the 1970s or so, they started a resurgence. Yeah. And here they are, nesting in the Hudson Valley, the Hudson Highlands, the Berkshires, the Adirondacks, you name it. Highlands and lowlands, they're here.
Oh, great. I have a lot of big old white pines on my property. Hopefully they'll breed here. That'd be nice. All right. Thank you.
Well,
Thank you.
They'll look for a cliff face. I've seen them where they've nested on windowsills in open windows in a barn, an abandoned or an old idle barn. But nonetheless, they're out there.
Haven't seen too many in my neighborhood.
They're there.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're
you
all
hear
around.
Them.
You hear them? And you, that's right. Their voice travels for a good mile or so.
Absolutely.
And
what do they sound like?
Well, yeah.
Let's take another call. Jim in North Pownell. Jim, you're on. We have a winner.
Well, yeah.
What's up, man?
Fantastic show.
Thank you.
When you guys are on the air, it is absolutely spectacular. I love the thing about the drunken cedar wax wings.
Oh, yeah.
My thing is not to put out a bird feeder because my cat will attack the birds that come to the feeder. So what I do is I plant trees and shrubs that have berries on them that the birds can help themselves to. And one of my favorites is the pagoda dogwood.
Mm-hmm.
They like that.
And I'm sure it's a favorite among the birds. So
yeah.
And good for you. I like your approach way better than the bird feeder approach. But not everybody can do that. But I really endorse that. I much prefer natural planted foods, native plants, such as a mountain ash or a serviceberry or some of those fruits that the birds can use. A serviceberry will be gone by June, but it's worth it anyway. But with regard to the cats, we had this conversation the last time, and I want to say that there's a collar, a colorful collar that you can put on a cat that apparently works.
Yeah.
We did. And I just want to endorse it one more time. And if anybody has any experience with that, I sure would like to hear about that. And it's Birds Be Safe.
Birds Be Safe.
And that's Birds Be Safe. One word. You look it up on a Google it and yeah. And check it out. Very inexpensive. You put it around a collar. It's not one of these scary kind of collars that I've seen in the past.
They're not paying you, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, good.
Absolutely
good.
Not.
All right.
I just,
it's legal.
I'm doing this for the benefit of the birds out there and also for the people who have cats who can't keep them indoors for one reason or another.
Jim, do you have another question?
No, that's it.
Hey, man.
Jim, great. Thank you.
Keep on keeping on.
Well, happy New Year, my friend. We'll see you around. And our number here is 800-348-2551. The one and only Rich Guthrie is our guest. Johnny in Shutesbury. Johnny, what's happening?
Howdy. Along with the sunflower seeds and suet, I like to mow paths in the lawn and let other things grow all the way to seed and dry as it is. I've noticed that soon after we fill, some bird is taking the sunflower seeds and sticking them in the evening primrose seed pods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what
that
might be.
So a bird is taking...
And cashing them away someplace.
Wow.
A couple of birds will do that.
Yeah.
The black-capped chickadee, the tufted titmouse, the nuthatch, both of them, will do that. And what they do is, that, you know, when there's a plentiful supply, they'll go for it, store it away, and somebody else will find it before they remember where they put it.
That seems like what's going on. In regards to...
Your connection's a little bad, Johnny. I don't know if you're on a cell phone
or not.
Yeah.
A bell on the collar for the cat works wonders.
Does not work.
Why?
It does work.
Well, there's plenty of evidence out there
good
that
for
it's
you,
a nice
Johnny.
Job.
Give Guthrie a hard time.
No,
I like that.
If you got good evidence that it does, but there's plenty of evidence out there that the birds do not pay that much attention to it, and the cats are smart. They learn how to stifle it.
Really?
Yeah.
But the colors...
He's just not good at it.
The birds are good at seeing the colors.
The collar works.
Okay.
And it's cheap enough. It's probably cheaper than the bell.
I'll be darned. Johnny, thanks for the call. The number here with Rich Guthrie is 800-348-2551. Inga in New Paltz. Hello, Inga.
Hello. So my question is in regards to vultures.
Mm-hmm.
So every winter they come up, and we have about 70 or 80 of them that actually live behind my apartment building, and they'll sleep in the pine tree right behind my bedroom. And every time I go away for Christmas, I come back and they're all there. And this year there are none. And I know that they are migratory, but is it because of the weather? Is it too warm for them? And if so, will they ever come back?
Well,
or
you know,
is this the end of?
I've heard about this roost in New Paltz over the years, and what I suspect we're dealing with is the black vulture, which is the new kid on the block in the vulture world around here. The turkey
right.
vulture has been the one that has been around for several decades. The black vulture just recently showed up. Another one of these southern birds, like the mockingbird and the cardinal.
They're brazen, those black vultures.
They are. Well,
they
are.
Hang, you can walk right by them. They hang right out.
When
I turn on the light, when I come home at night, they all hiss at me.
Yes.
I mean, they did. They're not there right now, but every night I would turn on the light and they'd hiss and they'd get really mad that I was illuminating them.
They're pretty intimidating, that's for sure. But they're tenacious, but they are not particularly aggressive. They're threatening, but not aggressive. And I just, all I can say is they probably have found another place to hang out over the winter.
Aww. I liked them. They were very interesting.
Well,
they're all very unusual personalities. They had a system going, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah. I'm down with the vultures, too. I like the vultures.
Yeah, I'm in there, too. And the turkey vulture is a wonderful aviator. They take to the sky so naturally, like a schooner at sea. The black vulture is more like an aviator with training wheels. It's just they keep trying, but they just don't get it.
They like to sit on the sidewalk, I've noticed, right in town. That's
I know.
Hanging out.
I know.
Cars will drive by. They don't care.
There'll be the day they'll overstay their welcome,
care.
I think.
Well, Inga, thanks for the call. You know what I've seen a lot of, too, this year is turkeys.
Turkeys. It depends on the springtime, you know, their success, the nesting success. And it seems they had a late nest season this year. They beat all that spring flooding that we had locally.
Yeah.
And as a result, there have been a number of successful broods out there.
And the turkeys, they nest on the ground?
Yes, they do.
Ah.
Yeah. Which makes them very vulnerable to predation. But that's why they lay 13 eggs.
Wow. And what's the average net, if you will, for a turkey that'll lay 13 eggs? How many will come to viability?
Two.
Really?
Maybe.
Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's The Bird Show. 800-348-2551 is the number. Woody in Albany. Woody, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Rich. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
I recently was walking on one of the streets, one of the side streets from New Scotland, and in a yard on my left, I saw a bird that looked like it might be as tall as to my waist, and I'm a 5'8" guy. And I'm thinking, with the little bit that I could tell, because he was obscured by a bush, it's either a bald eagle or a turkey vulture. And I wouldn't be surprised if a turkey vulture came down into somebody's backyard chasing its dinner. But would an eagle come down into somebody's backyard like that?
Certainly.
Really?
Certainly.
Even around in Albany?
Oh, sure. First of all, eagles are one of the great success stories that we enjoy in the Northeast. And they have become so successful that they kind of used up all the prime habitat. And they're beginning to spread out into secondary types of locations. So they'll show up in places where you wouldn't expect them.
Don't they eat fish, though?
They eat fish and other things.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, if they find something dead along in a field someplace, bingo, they're in. Now, being in somebody's backyard is probably not probable. It's probably not the case. I would think that you looking at a vulture. And we were just talking about the black vulture. I'm going to put that in as the candidate bird in that backyard. They're very large. They can easily be looked at as and suspected to be an eagle. But and they also, as we said, they're also quite unafraid. So they'll make themselves comfortable in almost any place. And if there was something in the yard, a chipmunk or a squirrel or whatever, they'll help themselves to it.
Well, would a black vulture have white legs?
They will look white, yes, because they are kind of a pale gray, and and so yes, they will look white.
Hmm. Okay, gosh, I wish I could have seen it clearer. Okay, just a comment before I let you go. All that talk about crows seem to be diminishing in the area. When I'm out at 7 with my grandson to put him on the school bus, we see what look like hundreds of crows coming up from...
I'm going to say the golf course.
The golf course?
Yeah,
think?
No, I'm thinking of Pine Hills.
Okay.
They seem to be coming up from Pine Hills, and they cross New Scotland Avenue, and I don't know whether they're just going around in circles or if different schools follow one another after a couple of minutes.
No, they're commuting. And what you have there in that neighborhood, I know there's a very large roost site for overwintering crows.
Ah.
And they'll come in at night, spend the night, and then in the day, head on out to the cornfields out in the countryside. So, it's not unexpected, but that's because of a favored concentration of them.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich has some events to talk about, and we'll get to the home stretch of calls coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Gosh, Rich Guthrie, you're so darned popular. The lines have been loaded the entire program.
Well, it's all fun. We're all enjoying fun. Every minute.
That's the secret to my success. It's all fun. You have some events coming up.
We do. First of all, let's talk a little bit about springtime in Patagonia. I really want to invite a bunch of people to come join us on a trip down to Patagonia and Argentina.
You're going to Patagonia?
Chile. Why not, man? And we're doing it in the spring, November. And things will be great.
That's tremendous. How would people find out more about that?
Email me.
And what is your email address, Richard P. Guthrie?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. P as in Peter.
Okay.
All one word up to the Gmail part.
All right. Well, that's exciting. What else is going on?
Okay. Last time we talked about the green-tailed toy, the golden crown sparrow, et cetera.
Yes.
The idea is that there's still some of those possibilities out there. The likelihood is they will not look like the pretty picture of the male in springtime. They will look like an immature or female bird, much more reduced in color and markings. Find that or any other bird and let us know via eBird. eBird.org. This is a Cornell University and National Audubon Society joint effort to document the presence and share the information. A wonderful citizen science opportunity.
And before you get the idea that I'll prank Rich and put one on there, Rich and others will review the material.
Yeah, we have to vet it so that people will rely on the information that they see on there, and we want to make sure that it is reliable.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that get a little exaggerated, mistaken, or, you know, just placed in the wrong spot.
So did my pterodactyl sighting ever make it on?
Probably not. I don't recall seeing it.
I'll try it again.
And what's going on out there right now? The great horned owls are nesting.
Ah.
And this would be a great time to go out on a winter night and just take a walk in the woods and listen for the great horned owl.
All right. Keep doing that for a while. All right. Anything else going on?
And also, let's see. Lots of stuff with the local bird clubs and societies. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be talking about urban birding at the Five Rivers Environmental Education Center.
That's a rural site.
Yeah, but we got a city guy coming in to talk about
okay.
it. And that's on February 4th at 7 p.m. at Five Rivers, Urban Birding, Wildlife in Not-So-Wild Places. Then on the 26th of January, the Mearns Bird Club down in Orange County, New York, will be doing an eagle trip. And for that, go to their website, mearnsbirdclub.org. The goal this year is to see if they can see more than 100 eagles, and they got the spot to look for it.
Okay.
And this is an easy stand-around look at the Alan DeVoe Bird Club will be going to the Schwangunk Grasslands on January 19th. That's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And for them, you could go look at Alan DeVoe, D-E-V-O-E, Bird Club, online. And it will be led by Catherine Schneider, who's been on this program before.
Very good.
The author of the book, Birds of the Hudson
Indeed,
Valley.
Indeed, yes.
Then the Hudson River Audubon Society, HRAS.org, will be going to the famous, internationally well-known Jamaica Bay Wildlife Sanctuary down in New York City on Saturday, January 26th. Check them out, HRAS.org. Bedford Audubon on Third Thursday Bird Walk is going to Maple Avenue in Katona, New York, in Westchester County.
Beautiful.
And they, too, are having an Eagle Watch on January 17th at the Lower Hudson Valley. Again, contact bedfordaudubon.org. And I do want to mention further down on a calendar, mark it in your calendars, over in Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Audubon Society will be holding the annual Birders Meeting Sunday, March 3rd, at the College of the College of Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Okay.
It's about the beauty of birds, notable speakers, programs, presentations, art, gear, and more.
Nice. Will you be speaking?
I will not, but that's March 3rd at Worcester, Massachusetts, College of Holy Cross.
Very good.
That's it for this upcoming events. Join them in. This is a great time of year to get out and participate.
All right, Rich Guthrie, let's see how many calls we can get through here in the waning moments. Joan in Schenectady is next. Joan.
Hello there. Hello, Rich, and hello, Ray.
Hi.
I called in about a comment I wanted to share about an injured, I believe it's a song sparrow. When I first saw it, I didn't think it was going to make it. It was down to one tail feather. And it looks like it's lost one of its legs.
Ow.
We have a lot of prey birds around here, so I was watching it, and I'm glad to report I've been watching it for a full week now. It hops on its one leg just great, and it is great in the air.
Mm.
Doesn't quite round the corners quite as well, but I'm just impressed that this bird that almost met its death is just... Looks like it's going to make it.
That's great.
Spunky little bird. And song sparrows, while they don't look like much, have a marvelous song. And they ought to start to sing as the days get a little bit longer towards the end of January. So lucky you. It's a wonderful sound to hear.
And that was another comment I wanted to share. You were talking about crows and predator species in Alma. Location in an urban area is actually ideal. We have tons of crows. We have, I think... Is there two species of crows now here, the American crow? And there's one that comes in that sounds more like a duck, not a raven, but more a smaller
shape. You're absolutely right. That's the fish crow.
The fish crow.
Yeah. Yes, and it's been described, and I like it. It sounds like an American crow with a Boston accent.
I like it. I said it sounded like a duck and a crow got together on a lonely night. That's what it sounds like to me.
Cool.
And the ravens, let's go with sound. Hear the raven for you. My sister taught me it's like a crow with a bad cold.
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, better than Ray did it. Yeah.
Joan, you're going into the Hall of Fame for that one.
Thank you very much. They're all here, including the Merlin that took a small bird. In front of my eyes, no more than 20 feet away from me, right here in my backyard.
Merlins are good birds, too.
So the wild ones are here in the city for sure. I think that's going to be a good talk that you talked about. Thanks.
That's at Five Rivers coming up on January 17th.
All right, let's go over to Howard in Albany. Howard, you're on.
Hello. I have a question. I was out in my backyard about a week ago, hanging out my laundry. I wish more people would do that. And overhead, there was two huge flocks of Canada geese, and I couldn't believe it. They were going north
Yep.
in the middle of winter.
Well,
and I'm just curious what Rich would think about that.
Well, it's kind of an odd winter, isn't it? There's so much open ground still up, around, and the Canada geese will be looking for an open cornfield or a hayfield that they can find some chow in. So, and a lot of the lakes up north haven't frozen yet. Lake George still open, many parts of Lake Champlain. So they're taking advantage of what everybody else left behind.
And will they presumably go back south again if the weather turns bad?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll turn around. They'll
I wasn't seeing things. When I saw them going north, I said, my goodness.
No.
And then about a few days later, I was at Five Rivers, where I love to go, and I saw a flock of Kennedys going south.
Well, there you go.
And I was, saying to my son, maybe they checked their GPS or something.
Well, Canada geese will come and go as conditions permit.
Let me ask you a question before we go to the next call, and I'll make it quick. Do you find that birds that travel north or south are predictive of weather or reactive to weather?
More like reactive.
So you won't know, like, oh, gosh, the weather's going to get cold. Those birds are heading south.
No. And most of the birds don't even pay attention to that. They're not driven by local weather conditions.
Yeah.
It's all instinctive. So many of the birds that summer here are long gone. They're not paying attention, and they'll start returning even as it's snowing in March.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jeffrey in Hobart. Jeffrey.
Hey, listen, I love the talk about the crows and everything and ravens. When I was a kid, we had a pet crow. We had flying squirrels, raccoons, blah, blah, blah. But now the coolest thing was this.
Oh.
They're looking out over my marsh.
Hey, we missed Jeffrey. We missed just a little bit of that. I think your cell phone cut out. Start again. The coolest thing was this, and then we lost it.
Okay, this fall.
Bad connection.
Sitting there, and we see this bird come down. Now, to me, it's a hawk because it acted like a hawk. It was going through the cattails and through the marsh, but it was pure white.
Okay.
And I'm like, holy crap. Now,
thanks for that.
You know, and I'm like, nope, it's not wintertime. It's not a snowy owl or whatever.
All right.
And I went through all my books, and I'm looking through all the phases of hawks. And then I worked with another guy, Wayne. He says, have you seen the white hawk? And I said, yeah.
Okay.
I saw the white hawk.
So what do you think, Rich?
Well, what I'm suspecting is
it's a red tail.
Yeah, red tail hawk. Good. Yeah, and there is a genetic strain of white red tail hawks. A beautiful, beautiful bird, all white.
My God!
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so come to find out, the DEC had put a blind right down the road for me, and the guy got pictures of it flying right over his blind, and he said they're watching three nesting sites in New York State.
Neat.
So how rare is this?
Very rare. Nice about the white red-tail hawks is that you can keep track of them. And for a long period of time, I know a pair. Usually these are females. And
male is
normal. There was one in Millbrook, New York, another in Stony Creek, New York.
Okay.
And these were around 15 years or so.
Yeah. Well, so that's a great call, Jeffrey. Thank you for that one. Fred in Albany. Fred.
Yes. I'm wondering, is there anything you can do for the predatory birds? Like I got a falcon in the yard that keeps terrorizing the birds. There's not many left. I was just kind of curious if you can deter them somehow.
Well, the one thing you possibly could do is if you're feeding the birds, to cut back on the feeding so that they will disperse wider. That hawks are very industrial. They're opportunistic, and if they see a ready menu, they're gonna be there. They're gonna keep coming back. That's the way it goes. They've got to make it through the winter as well.
All right, and you said you had one more event that
I just wanted to correct a mistake I made earlier.
Oh, my gosh, that's so rare.
No problem. The urban birding program that we spoke about is actually February 4th this year at 7 o'clock. I mentioned that I misspoke it in a comment on another call.
Okay.
February 4th at Five Rivers, urban birding.
Right. Over to Sue in Delmar. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Rich, yeah. I just have a basic question to ask about throwing out leftovers such as popped popcorn, cooked rice, and certain grains as that. Also, peanuts in a shell. Will birds eat that?
Yep.
And is it bad for them or good for them?
No, it's okay. It's okay. There's a lot of talk about the nutritional value of these foods, but I'll tell you something. Birds know the difference. If it ain't good, they're not going to take it.
Okay.
And you can see this when you buy some of the cheap bird seed that you can pick up in a supermarket and a hardware store. The birds will overlook it. They'll just eat around it. They'll get the good stuff out of there and leave the bad stuff behind. So they can, by nature, can distinguish. They can identify nutritious foods.
It doesn't blow up in their stomach?
No.
So cooked rice, safe also?
No.
Is that what you tell me?
That was an old country tale.
Right? Okay.
It doesn't happen.
Oh. Okay, good to know. There's always plenty of that to throw out.
Well, Sue, thanks for the call.
Well, just be careful. No leftovers. You don't want to leave leftovers after dark because in the night, marauders will be around helping themselves, and some of those are not so pleasant.
You're right about that. Jerry in Queens Hollow. Jerry, you're on.
Hi, fellas. Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was out bow hunting this fall, probably sometime in middle of November. And, you know, sitting still, camouflage, and all of a sudden a ruckus about 50 yards to my right. And I look over, and from about 6 feet up, I see a red-tailed hawk and a raven tumbled and hit the ground.
Mm.
The raven got away from the hawk and flew off, and the hawk kind of stood there and then got up on a branch and hung out for a couple of minutes and then flew away.
Huh.
I was wondering if you had any comment on that.
Ravens and hawks do not get along well.
Really?
And they're both about equal size. So the raven will take on a hawk. And the purpose behind it is to drive him out of the territory, to get rid of him.
It's a fair fight?
It's a fair fight, but it sounds like the red tail held its own. So,
The red tail hunts those woods.
Yes, and the raven will just sort of roam through the woods looking for easy pickings, and found the red tail. And challenged it, and it sounds like it was a standoff. So yeah, that happens. It doesn't usually get to that tumble to the ground level, but apparently, I would suspect that either the hawk or the hawk probably had some chow that the raven might have tried to steal.
Oh, very interesting.
That's only a guess.
Larry in Sheffield, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yes, point of information, there's a real interesting article on chickadees in this month's issue of the New York State Conservationist magazine.
Good for you.
I think people would find enjoyable.
Okay.
And also, as to these geese that are flying north, they are local flocks that are born and raised here. The program was started back in the 70s where people could buy a clipped pair of geese, and that just multiplied over the state of New England. And this is the reason why we have so many of these local geese.
You're absolutely right.
They stay as long as they can before they go south.
You're absolutely right. And they shuffle back and forth between one cornfield and the other, or down to an open pond or a golf course or wherever they can find, you know, someplace without a dog.
All right, Larry, thanks for the call. And this will probably be the last one. Lou in Greenfield, you're on. You only have about 30 seconds.
Hi, I was wondering if there was a resource to look up a bird of prey that is calling about an hour after dusk that I'm stumped on.
Ooh.
Try Merlin, Merlin.
It's
an app.
M-A-R?
Merlin.
Got it.
That's a bird identification
app.
Right. And also check out What Bird of a Cornell site.
What Bird?
What Bird.
Hey, can you imitate the bird really quickly, Lou, before we go?
I can try.
Let's hear it.
I'm going to guess a baby owl.
A baby owl?
Yeah, a nighttime caller like that. So
That's a great way to end the show. And I want to thank Lou for that one because you get the sound effects and it leaves people wanting more.
And the owls are nesting now, so it's time for the new cast to show up.
All right. Well, Rich Guthrie, this was fun. Support comes from Penny Farthing, a socially responsible investment management, personal retirement, and endowment portfolios. Amherst, pennyfarthinginvestment.com. Eric Bright, CFA, and Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design featuring Cambria quartz countertops and Merillat cabinetry and more. Designer consultations available. CurtisLumber.com. Rich.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for calling and for some terrific sound effects today. Remember, the Raven sounds like this. Ah, ah, right? Right?
Sounds like he's trying.
All right. Yeah, I did it my best. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones are answered by Dina Salzman, our producer, Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, all the scientists are back. And once again, it'll be the Algonquin Roundtable of Science Talk, beginning at 2 on Vox Pop. Right now, stand by for news.